Hello, my name is Les, and I'm an alcoholic. I didn't think I was nervous until I tried to walk into the women's restroom instead of the men's restroom. So we'll see how this goes. Makes sense. Depends how you're looking at it. For those of you that are new to the program, welcome. I was told when I first got in here that the newcomers are the most important people in the room, and I didn't understand that when I walked into the room. But I can tell you that all of you helped me stay sober one day at a time, so I appreciate you all showing up today. I was once told when I was asked to share, I said, you know, I can't mess it up, right? It's my own story, and they assured me that I could definitely mess it up. He was kind of joking, but the reality is, you know, I'm here to share a message. I'm here to talk about recovery. I'm here to talk about me, my experience, strength, and hope. And some of this stuff may resonate with some of you, but my goal, if anything else, is, you know, to talk recovery, because I don't know about all you, but I sure knew how to get drunk, but I didn't know how to stay sober. Right? And I talked to Israel, talked about how living life, and I'm still trying to figure that out, because I lived life under under the alcohol for a long, long time. So what I'll first talk about is my drunk log a little bit, and won't stay in it too long because, again, all you guys knew how to drink, right, or you wouldn't be here. I started off drinking when I was 12 years old. I feel like I was drinking alcoholically from the very beginning. I started off with 2 wine coolers, the first drink, and then immediately went to vodka. And, you know, we used to drink when we were kids, and we'd see who could drink the most. And I thought that by me drinking the most made me the best at it, right? But really what it was early signs of my alcoholism. When I talked to my mom when I was doing my amends, she talked to me about how I was always a little trying to be different than everybody, right? And I was just never quite was fitting in, and that was because I wanted to be different. I just kind of naturally grew up that way, and I think that's a underlying characteristic of my alcoholism. My drinking progressed as time went on. My first incident drinking was at 16 years old, my first arrest. Got a DUI, going to Pismo, and that was the first of many. As time went on, drinking continued to progress. I think, and this is not a brag, I used to think this was a brag, but this is just where I was, is that I got arrested in 5 or 6 different counties, all for drinking-related offenses, and each time got worse and worse and worse. Right? The first time I blew a .08, and the last time I wrecked my car, and I blew a .39, and under the influence of other substances as well. .39 alone, shouldn't be walking, shouldn't be driving, let alone, right? And end up in a hospital, and one of those instances where I didn't learn my lesson. To backtrack a little bit, I lost my brother about 6 years ago to a drinking and driving accident. And because I was in my own disease, right, in my own thing, never really got to grieve that instance, and just continued to drink more and more just to drown out the pain and sorrow and grieving process. That didn't slow me down. I got into a car accident 2 years after his death, and that was my first major car accident. And I fled the scene, but my the cop showed up to my dad and my stepmom's house because that's where my car was registered, and they had to relive the horror of that same scene when the cops pulled up to the car and we lost their brother and their son. You know, and I just never really understood how that could have, my drinking could impact other people. I thought I drank in a bubble, and I thought I was only hurting myself. And that was the furthest from the truth. I was hurting a lot of people around me, whether I realized it or not. A couple years later, I went, I was applying for a promotion, and I went through all the steps, you know, passed the interviews, and I met with HR, and HR, I thought, was just part of the promotion process. Well, they really wanted to talk to me about my arrest records and my drinking. They said, you know, they had small talk for a little bit. I was living down south in Long Beach, and they said, do you think that you have a drinking problem? Because we saw that you have some arrests on there. And I said, you know, I'm just a young college kid. I was 24 at the time. Just got out of college a year or two before that. I was a late bloomer. I went to college for about 6 years. And they said, yeah, we can understand that, you know, once or twice. But at that point, I had like 7 arrests. And it said, do you think you have more than, you know, bad luck, or you're just a young kid? And again, it didn't register to me. It was, no, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is like what my life is supposed to be like. Not blaming my family or parents at all. I have my mom, who's an army, and I have my dad, who was probably one of us. I can't pronounce anyone else alcoholic. But, you know, genetics and environment make up a person. Well, my dad drank all the time, and I was around it all the time, so I was probably a little bit predisposed to drink. But again, I don't put that on him. But seeing his lifestyle, I thought that's what normal was. But normal is not waking up and not knowing where you're at. Normal is not waking up and being in jail. Normal is not waking up and being in the hospital. That's not normal. But I thought it was. You know, that's what I believed at the time. So fast forward, I talked about that severe car accident where I had 0.39. In that instance, completely blacked out, drove through a fence, hit a... knocked over an oak tree. I don't know if you guys know about oak trees, but they're pretty big. Yeah, right? Knocked that down. Knocked over an outdoor brick gazebo. Almost ended up in a pool. And my car went up in flames. It was at an office that was like, it was an old house, but it was an office. And there happened to be someone there at the time. Usually no one occupied that place at those times. And he happened to be there, and he pulled me from my burning car, or I probably wouldn't be here today. I don't think that was coincidence. Stop believing in coincidences a while ago, because I've been given like a cat with more lives. But that was that was one of the big ones right there. But even despite that, it didn't stop. I woke up in the hospital that night. I was released, and, went through the process. I actually didn't get charged with anything for that circumstances due to technicality, so I wasn't really learning my lesson. I woke up with a black eye and a bruised chest, and that was really what I thought was the extent of my losses. But I had to keep learning the hard way. And so a few years passed, and I have a kid on the way now. Right, and that was a shock, because I still couldn't take care of myself, so how am I going to take care of a kid? And I had other stuff going on besides drinking, but drinking is the root cause of all my stuff. You know, I started drinking at a very, very young age, and all this stuff that came with it and outside issues, but I've gotten into more trouble, you know, come close to death with drinking more rather than anything else. But the kid's on the way, and I said, okay, I'm going to stop 6 months before she gets here, and 3 months before she gets here, and okay, I'll stop. She's being born in a week. I'll stop the day before she comes, you know, and day comes, and I'm getting ready to go to the hospital. I get my girlfriend in the car, and I go, I forgot something inside. I had to run in and get my stuff, and also had a pound of 2 beers before we left. Luckily, I drank pretty fast, so I didn't have to take too much time before I got back in the car. But even while she was in the hospital, I was coming and going to take showers, but really just to continue to get loaded, because that's what I had to do. I couldn't deal with anything else in my life sober, so how am I going to deal with a new kid coming that now I have to get to take care of, you know? It just kept going, and it wasn't until she was born May 10th, and it wasn't until June 12th that I was found out, found other stuff. My girlfriend found other stuff in my possession, and the gig was up. And I remember telling her when that happened that that was the biggest relief I could ever have. I felt like a weight was off of my shoulders because I was not necessarily a functioning alcoholic, but I was, my life was still holding together with the thread. And now I didn't have to tell the web of lies that I was living for so long. You know, the truth was out. She knew what was going on, and the process began. The first meeting I went to was at the Alano Club. I believe it was June 14th. I can check my phone because I put it in there, but I remember going to my first meeting, and it was an AA meeting, and they were talking about powerlessness, my first step. And I always wanted to be the center of attention. I knew what was going on, right? I knew everything about AA, even though I'd never been in the rooms. And I said, I thought I was smarter than everybody else. And the book talks about the alcoholic of the intelligent intelligent type, right? They think they're too smart for their own good. And that was me. And I said, I refuse to believe I'm powerless. You know, this was my own doing. I made these decisions. But as I started to go through the program, I've just described a ton of reasons why I'm powerless. Right? I got into multiple car accidents, multiple arrests. What normal person would keep drinking after all these examples? You know, usually it takes a normal person, one bad incident, you know, maybe a DUI or something, and oh, I'm never drinking again. They're able to do that. Not me. And it took me a while to realize that I was powerless over alcohol. My life had become unmanageable. That part was pretty evident, right? So I mean, that kind of, I got that second part, but I wasn't able to admit that I was powerless over alcohol. I remember leaving that meeting and telling my girlfriend, I'm not going back to those AA meetings. I know all about drinking. I've been doing it for 30 years, 25 years. Right? I know all there is about drinking. But what I didn't know about was recovery. And that's what AA is all about. It doesn't teach you how to drink. I already knew how to do that. In that time, I also started attending an IOP program, which was good in the sense that it gave me some educational variety. There was some accountability because there was regular testing. But I really got my recovery really came from AA and really from the steps. So, June 14th was my first meeting I talked about, but my sobriety date is not until July 19th, so it still took some time for it to kick in. I got a sponsor probably right at 30 days because IOP was required you to get a sponsor within 30 days, so I waited until day 30 to get a sponsor. It wasn't somebody that I necessarily clicked with. But it was the person that spoke the most in the rooms, and I was like, this guy must know what he's talking about. And he was good. He did what he was supposed to do. He started taking me through the steps, and that's what the sponsor's job is. The sponsor's job, in my opinion, not to be your best friend. They might be a good friend of yours. They might be something you can lean on at all times. But a sponsor's job, in my opinion, is to take you through the work. Right? Take the steps. And so I worked with him for a little bit, but it just wasn't, I don't know what it was. It just wasn't jiving. And I reached out to somebody else who was referred to me. And I remember that conversation. I want to say it was early August, around August 12th. And I texted him and I said, hey, explained who I was, how I was referred to him, and explained what was going on. And he told me he was in Alaska. And that he'd be back at the end of August and to reach out to him on August 25th. And I said, okay, I believe those are the dates. I might be getting a day or two off. But the 25th rolls around. And again, of course, I'm like, he's probably unpacking and doesn't want to talk to somebody today. I was giving myself excuses not to talk to somebody. But I think it was the day didn't end before he reached out to me and he said, hey, it's the 25th. I haven't heard from you yet. What's up? And this is a guy I don't know, and he's reaching out to me and going out of his way. So we decided to meet at Apple Annie's or Applebee's, and I still don't know what this guy looks like, who he is, or anything like that. But I'm looking around, kind of standing in the parking lot, kind of like on a blind date, just kind of uncomfortable, right? Looking for like someone that might fit the description. And this guy comes pulling around in the parking lot with the windows down and his hat backwards and smoking a cigar and music. I think the music was blaring, and I was like, it's probably the guy. And, it was. And, you know, we proceeded to sit there for about an hour. We got into my car, and because they, for reasons, we didn't stay there. We got into my car, and we sat in my car, and we talked for about an hour. And he kept telling me that you're not that bad. Like, it doesn't seem like you're that bad. And I'm like, I'm fucked up. I don't know what this guy's talking about. But it helped a little bit, right? So he became my sponsor. And we started going through the work. I got to about the third step with my last sponsor. I pretty much broke up with my first sponsor right when I hit the fourth step because I didn't want to do any work. So we took off where me and the first sponsor left off. But we rehashed the first three steps just to make sure we're on the same page. But he didn't, I asked him if he was, you know, he'd be my sponsor. He goes, we'll see. He didn't commit to me, right? I think he wanted to see if I was going to keep showing up. And I was like a dog that, you know, knew where his home was. I kept showing up. I kept showing up every Friday at 6:30 in the morning. I live in Visalia, driving to Slary during the fog. And the only reason I share that is because I don't take credit for anything except for the work that I put in. The miracle happened by God. And I'm a firm believer of that, by taking the steps. But I put in the work. It wouldn't have happened if I didn't put in the work and keep showing up. And so we went through the work. You know, I had a real trouble with the higher power thing. I grew up Catholic. Never really a strong believer. When I went to college, I got all hippie-like, right, and started learning about philosophy and the different religions and stuff like this. And I'm like, I'm agnostic. I didn't even know what it meant. So it was hard for me when they had that God word. I remember looking at the steps. I already had trouble with that powerlessness thing, the first step, and I got it back, and boom, second step, third step, God, God, God. And I'm like, this isn't going to work. But as the book describes, right, it talks about a broad highway and a God of your own understanding. And that really made it easier and softer for me to be able to get my foot in the door. My sponsor says that it says, being willing. My sponsor just said, you just got to be willing. And by doing that, you crack that door open. You crack that door open and you let God slip into your life and start showing himself. And you realizing it, because God's already shown himself in my life several times. I talked about him saving my life from burning cars, right? And me being here today is an example of God being in my life. So we got through, when I got to the fourth step, and I started doing the work, I was still struggling with that God thing, and I was sitting there on my couch, I can still remember it, and I felt alone. I felt like, okay, I'm not drinking anymore. I was a very social drinker, going out with friends or going out to bars, whatever it was, and I just felt alone because I didn't have those acquaintances. I didn't know what to do anymore, and for some reason, this is the image that gave me that God moment, and it was just imagining a flower, and a flower as a bud, and just blossoming into existence. And that picture gave me the realization of, like, how does something like that happen, right? This natural order of things in life, whether it be the falling of leaves or the blossoming of a flower, and I just, God hit me right there. And I thought, I'll never be alone again. Never be alone again because I always have God. And the reality was, even though I had all those friends and all those acquaintances that I was around, I could be lonely in a room full of people. Right? I could be completely lonely in a room full of people. I'd be the one at the end of the bar sometimes sitting by myself and looking into the group and just trying to be a part of them. Being in the scene, but I was sitting there by myself. and I didn't have to be by myself anymore. So from there, I proceeded to the next steps. And when I worked the fifth step and admitted to myself and to another human being, God, that, what my stuff was, the desire and the obsession to drink was removed. And it happened like that. It happened like that. It was immediately removed. I'm not saying that thought doesn't come through my mind sometimes, but it's a thought and it comes and it goes. If it lingers a little bit longer than that, I might all reach out to somebody. Even last night, I don't know if it was because of this, getting ready for this, I had a heavy, heavy drinking and drugging dream. And I hadn't had one of those in a while. Even though they're just dreams, sometimes it's a slap in the face and saying, hey, maybe you're not doing everything you're supposed to be doing. And I kind of put myself under a microscope and make sure I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So I proceeded through the steps, continued to work the steps, again, meeting with my sponsor, religiously. I don't know if people don't like this step or not, but I really love making an amends with people. Because, and I've learned just from my experience that making amends isn't saying you're sorry. Making amends is saying I was wrong. This is what was going on, and leaving it at that. And, living a different life from there on out, because I can't change the past. What's done is done. But what I can do is change the now and the future, right? One day at a time. And, so if I go and I tell them I'm sorry for this and that, and I go and I keep doing the same bullshit, then it doesn't do me any good, right? Talking out of both sides of my mouth like I always had. But I hope that people have seen a difference, and I know people have seen a difference. But I don't take credit for that. The program, I owe that all to the program. And when I got through the steps, I'm still not done, right? 10, 11th, and 12th steps are maintenance steps that I got to do on a daily basis. Do a 10th step at night, looking at what I did wrong and what I could do differently and make immediate amends when that happens. Improving my conscious contact with God. I do that every morning. I do morning meditation. So I get up and I do a third step prayer. I do a gratitude list. And I do prayers for other people. And I pray for God's knowledge of God's will and the power to carry it out. It says that in one of our readings that that's specifically what we're supposed to do. Praying only for God's will and the knowledge to carry it, or the power to carry it out. And so, but I throw some other people in there with the caveat, though, if that's your will, God, because just like the death of my brother and other stuff, there's stuff that I don't understand. I'm not going to understand. If God was small enough for me to understand, he wouldn't be big enough to solve the world's problems. Right? And so I got to believe that. I got to have faith. But that's a work in progress. My whole recovery is a work in progress. Because as Israel talked about at the beginning, now I'm at the point where, how do I live life? What do I do? I was told when I first started drinking that you stop maturing when you first start drinking, right? So I first started drinking at 12 years old, and I didn't, start going up again until I was 35 years old. So basically, being a little over a year in sobriety, I'm basically like 13 years old, like in math term, right? So I'm still a punk-ass teenage kid, and I act like it sometimes. I really do, but it's gotten better. It'll continue to get better, but that's contingent upon my spiritual condition. And that means that I have to stay in conscious contact with God. The one thing that I continue to work on, so I talked about my morning meditations. Like, I feel that sometimes when I do those morning meditations, then my day starts and God goes in the back. God's got to ride with me all day long. He's got to be either driving, he needs to drive. I need to sit passenger. I don't drive very well. I've already told you about that, right? So he needs to drive. I'll sit shotgun. That's fine. But that's something I continue to work on. And I've seen it, when stuff happens, whether it be at work or with a loved one. you know, just taking a second and, you know, praying to God and saying the serenity prayer, whatever it takes, and just taking that moment to think a little more clearly. And then what I did, now what I do, is I work with others. You know, working with others can be at meetings or whatever, but my belief is working with others is taking them through the steps just like my sponsor took me through the steps. Nothing so much ensures immunity from drinking as intensive work with another alcoholic. And that's what I need to do now. That's what I get to do now. Because my sponsor used to say, I never understood it, and I still kind of don't understand it. And he'd say, when I go meet with them, it's like pouring honey on my forehead. Still don't really understand it, but I think that's a good thing, right? I mean, that's a good thing. I don't really want honey poured on my forehead, but the feeling leaving, you know, with somebody is second to none. Every time, like, I work a step, I'm like, man, that was awesome. And I continue to be amazed by, like, the process of recovery. It's a gift that keeps on giving if you put into it. You know, it's not something that I can just show up when I want to show up. It's not something that is a part-time job. I have to try as harder to stay sober through the program than I ever tried to get loaded. Because, you know, I have to fight for it like that. I can remember, you know, doing some crazy shit just to get drunk. Crazy stuff, you know, scraping up money, robbing family members, you know, just stuff I never would have thought I would ever do. I'm not saying I'm going to rob to stay sober, but I'm going to do everything within my power by the, you know, by the right to making sure that I stay sober. And part of the program, it has the triangle, right? So it talks about unity, which in my opinion is like the fellowship, right? And working together with one another. I'll tell you a little bit about the fellowship right here. This morning I texted about, I think, like 20 people that I was speaking tonight. And, I think like 12, 13 of them showed up. That's a pretty good turnout in my opinion. But I want to relate that to if I did that with like my regular friends, right? And said, hey, I have something going on. Would you come tonight and support if you're able to? I guarantee you'd be five or less. And that just tells me what the fellowship's all about, like supporting one another through recovery, because I can't do this by myself. I absolutely cannot. It takes each and every one of you to help me stay sober. Hearing your stories, working with other people, hearing suggestions from other people, and that's what's helped keep me sober. It also talks about service. So I've been into service. I remember, I think they made an exception for me because we might have been short a couple people, but I think it was like you needed 6 months to be a secretary in one of the meetings. And I think I was in at about 60 days. I started secretarying a meeting, and I've continued to secretary that meeting since then. And I really like it. It allows me to be of service, right, because AA needs participating members to continue to continue to help move the program forward. I've been of several service committees. And it's just a good way to be held accountable and making sure you're showing up on a daily basis. And, you know, I encourage everyone to give the service aspect a try. Even if it's something like making coffee or being a greeter or whatever it is, work your way into it because that all matters. It all matters. It all makes up part of this meeting. And then the last part is recovery in that triangle. And, you know, my opinion, recovery is meetings. You know, taking people through the work and making sure that, you know, you're just living like, the program's laid out for you. The nice thing about the program, and I call it the program, not my program, because my program was what got me here. The program's what's in the first 164 pages. And I remember when everyone always said, read the first 164 pages. I'm like, how do they remember that it's the first 164? Like, why don't they ever say 163? Why doesn't someone mess up? Everyone always knows the 164. It's actually pretty easy to remember that. But for me, I was like always curious about that. But if you ever read the book, you'll understand what you get out of it. And I encourage you, if you read it once, read it again. And if you read it twice, read it again and continue to work it, because it's a textbook. It's not a one and done. It's kind of like the rest of recovery. You keep, every time I read it, it either rehashes something or it lights something else up new that where I'm at that point in time. And that's another thing that I really like working with other people, because I get to reread and go over with them, and I might spark something that I didn't have at the moment of time before that. And they may bring something up that I didn't have before that. You know, sometimes like they come with stuff, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. And that's why everyone's important in this deal. I think that's all I got tonight. I think that's all I got. I thank everyone for coming again. It's a good deal, and all I can tell you is you get what you put in. You get what you put in. It's, you know, you put in the work and you get the results. There's promises out there. There's promises for every step. It's in the book, and they are promises. They are promises, and I can never repay the Alcoholics Anonymous what it's given me. But I have to continue to work it. You know, it can go away just like that. It can go away just like that. But yeah, I have to stay active in the program. Thank you all for coming tonight. Last Alcoholic. We got some questions. Yes, sir. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know if you ever heard, like, do unto others as you want to do to yourself, as you want others to do unto you, right? I'd like to think I'm a better person now. My higher power I access through, it starts with my morning meditations. My sponsor and the book uses the term, you know, that we're all God's children, and to treat them as such. I've found that some of the hardest people for me to do that with are the people at home. Right, I can treat all of you like wonderful people, and then sometimes I get home and it doesn't turn out that way. But I have to just remember that saying. And God makes himself evident in my life as long as I continue to stay, you know, stay close to him. That those morning meditations and those prayer to God, I'm not going to lie to people, because this program takes rigorous honesty. If you look in the book, there's a lot of adjectives or adverbs. It like intensifies the word before it. So it uses rigorous honesty. It uses a lot of must. Rigorous honesty isn't like being like partially truthful. It's about telling the full truth. And, you know, I have to do that on a daily basis to continue to do that. And so when I talk about stuff, I don't embellish. But what I was getting to is that I don't meditate every single morning. I'm not going to lie to you guys. But I'm like 98% of the time. But I can tell you when I don't do it, what happens? I have a shitty day. I have a shitty day, and it's not by coincidence. You know, and so I think those that conscious contact before and at night, but I also talk about having to make it part of my regular day, right? Touching base and reset my day sometimes and talk with God. And, even if it's saying, hey, what's up, man? Just letting you know I'm thinking about you. You know, it doesn't have to be when something's going bad or when I need something. It can be just, you know, like, hey, I'm grateful for what I got today. And I think that's important. I think that's super important.
Another question.
Yes.
Where do you get the strength to start changing your behavior from before?
God? I mean, that's...
How do you find the strength? For me, but, you know, I mean, it's just that question.
Yeah, so, I mean... When I first got in here, people will say, you know, you need to do this program for yourself. I hear that a lot. You need to do this for yourself. When I first came in here, I did it for my daughter. I did it for my daughter 100%, right? And slowly but surely, I started to do it more for myself in a non-selfish way. Because if I can't start changing my behaviors, then it doesn't do me any good for her, right? And so really taking care of that and being around the program, being around the right group of people, staying, you know, doing the work and the steps. The steps are what changing. You know, it's, I'm not knocking meetings. Meetings are great for fellowship. The steps are where I got the change in life. That's where I had my spiritual experience. And I will never say anything different than that. Find yourself, if you don't have one already, and I'm not trying to talk at you, but just find yourself a sponsor and start working the steps, and you'll see the results. And, and that's where it was tough at first, because I talked about when I was sitting here not finishing the fourth step, and my life wasn't changing. All that changed was I was sober. I was still a piece of shit. I was still cheating on my girlfriend. I was still doing all this other stuff that I shouldn't be doing. All I wasn't drinking. It wasn't until I started to thoroughly go through the steps that my life started to change. And that's when I say God's present in those steps. You know, we have a physical, mental, and spiritual malady. And the steps provide answers for that. First 164 pages, I talked about that.
Hey, Les, can you tell us about how it is that you've done something for yourself in an unselfish way?
I told you he was going to ask me a question.
It was
going
to be the hardest, I told you.
Say that again.
Well, you said a minute ago that you first came to recovery and you were doing it for your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And you said slowly began to do it for yourself. And you said you started to do things for yourself in a non-selfish way. And I was just wondering if you could... I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah.
So if you don't think of something like that, I got another question.
Well, I think sponsoring people is an example of that, right? Because, I'm helping them out, but like my sponsor would always tell me, you're helping me more than I'm helping you. And again, I didn't understand that until I started sponsoring people. I always thought he was this guy, and I was like, man, he was God sent, and he is, but it wasn't, that person that keeps helping you, like I said, ensures immunity from going back to drinking. Right? So that's a prime example of that. Does that answer your question?
Very well.
Okay. That's the
test. Hey, Les, we got a question from the electronic area here.
Yeah.
Lita is asking a question. I'm Mr. Alcoholic. Lita is asking a question. Was there ever a time in the beginning of your recovery where life picked up fast, like responsibilities and changes and adjustments? How did you feel and react? More important, she wants to know if you could share how you got through that and the lessons you learned, the tools that you used.
That's a lot of stuff.
You want to read it.
All right, so life happened fast right from the beginning. Getting sober right when you have a new kid, and the pandemic was going on, right? That was a lot of stuff happening at once. I already talked about not being able to take care of myself. How am I going to take care of someone else? That was a lot of responsibility. How I got through it was coming to the program and start doing the work. I keep leaning on working the steps and working the steps and working the steps. But that's where it was at. That's where it was at for me. And a lot of those, you go into rooms and you go into meetings and you hear about people going through the same struggles, right? I don't want to say we're not unique, but because we are, we're all unique, we're all children of God. But a lot of us have gone through some of the same stuff. And that's what I love about the program, that someone that you may not ever think that you would ever mix with, and they say something, and you're like, yeah, man, I'm going exactly through that. So I've heard people in the rooms before talk about, you guys are my higher power when I first walked in. And you guys are definitely, God speaks to other people, and I absolutely have felt that. But I've also talked about the beginning, still learning how to live life. So I still have those challenges. But really just working through, either bouncing it off of other people, seeing what their thoughts are, or now that I've gone through the steps, I'm able to pray to God. And sometimes those answers that once baffled me now naturally come to me. That's been one of the nice step promises, I believe, right? The situation that once baffled me now automatically come to me. And that happens sometimes when I just take a step and breathe. So I hope there's, I know there's a lot more into that, but that's what you're going to get for that one. Anybody else? We got 2 more minutes. Got one
Thank
more
you.
Word, 2 more questions. You're welcome. Yes, thanks, Grant.
Okay, I was just wondering, like during your game stuff, like, what are some of the things that go through your head? Like, I'm talking about, you know, like problems, like when we're not in a real thing that bother you, shit, like, you know, enemies and your past and stuff. Like, what goes through your head? I mean, life's not hunky, but like,
no.
What are
no.
some of the things you can let you?
Yeah, so life isn't perfect. Life's different when you get sober. Right, and emotional, being contented sobriety is my goal. That means that I'm not going to always be super happy, and I'm not going to be super, you know, try not to get super sad or super down. Stuff happens in my life all the time, and I'm not going to act like I don't get twisted up about it, because I do. But that, taking a moment to breathe and to kind of think things through, say a small prayer. You know, one of the things that I, you know, do sometimes is I reflect about, like, the past, and I'm like, I think about how it was, right? All the glory days. When I'm thinking about those glory days, I'm missing out on that back half of the night when things all went bad, right? Because at, till about maybe 9 o'clock or so, things are probably going all right. Unfortunately, my night's been a lot later than 9 o'clock, and, you know, that's when I started getting into trouble. So, you know, my sponsor, and they talked about it in the morning meditations of the 24-hour book. If you guys don't have that book, I highly recommend it. It's a great morning meditation. And the last couple of days has talked about, you know, fun and trouble. And I'm going a little off topic on your thing, but the fun and trouble. So when I first started drinking, drinking was fun. Right, drinking served its purpose. It allowed me to conversate more, talk to girls, allowed me to go and do fun and wild stuff. But then at a certain point, some trouble started to come with it, right? And I was still having some fun, but I might, you know, end up with a black eye or whatever it was. And then by later in my drinking career, and I love how it's described as a career in the book because it was really a full-time job. Later in my drinking career, it became almost all trouble. I wasn't drinking for fun anymore. I was drinking because I had to. I was drinking because I was physically dependent on it. I was mentally dependent on it. And it filled all these voids in my life. And I didn't know. I mean, when I wake up and feel like crap, what's the best way to cure a hangover? Drink more, right? And it was a vicious, vicious cycle. And, I mean, I prayed this morning. That was one of the things I prayed about. I'm grateful that I wake up today and I don't have a hangover. Something as small as that, because what does a hangover mean? It means I got to start again, you know? And today I just get to start my day new and just basically reset from the day before, not carry it over. So I hope that answers your question a little bit. All right, 7:57, I made it.
Yeah. Our business meetings are held at 6 p.m. on the last Wednesday of each month.